You're listening to 42 Macros Pro to Pro Live, hosted by Darius Dale.
Howdy, Team 42. It's your skipper here, Darius Dale, to present another outstanding episode of our Pro to Pro Live discussion. I'm here with the man, the myth, the legend, the man who needs no introduction. Everybody knows who this man is across the world, Raul Paul from Real Vision. How you doing today, brother?
I'm fantastic. Always good to see you, Darius. I haven't seen you in a while, so it's great to see you.
Yeah, no, it really is great to see you, man. Before we even get going, I just want to say this to you on camera, man. You are one of the people that I most admire in this entire world, man. You have a phenomenal ethos about you. You care about people. It's very clear. You're very passionate and good at what we do. And so I just want to say you're someone that I look up to when I try to build 42 Macro and when I try to grind for our clients on a daily basis. So thank you for being a phenomenal mentor to me.
Thank you. And I'm also really proud of what you've built. You know, out of adversity, you've built something truly amazing. You've helped change people's lives, and that's amazing. So well done, you.
I appreciate you, brother. So let's, people didn't tune in to hear us virtually hug each other.
Why not?
Yeah, no, the world needs more love, man. And I'll leave that with folks as well. So clearly, you're coming at a phenomenal time. It's just random that this sort of our chat is a couple of weeks after this, DeepSeek development. I really want to start this conversation with your latest thoughts on AI, where we are in your exponential age thesis, and what you're kind of focused on, you know, over the medium term to kind of, you know, confirm or disconfirm that.
So the exponential age is basically something I started writing about maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, where I started saying, listen, I think there's going to be this nexus of technologies that all hit adoption effect at the same time. And unlike normal kind of Metcalfe's law, which tends to be exponential, this is going to be Reed's law, which is an exponential squared, because of all of these things are building on top of each other. You know, the internet already exists. And what you're going to get is robotics, AI, a change in what we do with energy. We're going to see genetic sciences, space travel. All these things are all going to happen. And even I did not think that this was going to happen at the speed of which we're seeing it.
Wow.
So when we look at what's just happened in politics, the technologists in a coup have taken over the White House. So we have Elon Musk, David Sachs, everybody from Vivek to JD Vance to Mark Andreessen, and they're all part of this administration, either in the front door or through the back door, right? So we're about to hyper-accelerate here. And what we're seeing with AI is, again, I did not believe this. Last year, beginning of the year, that when you measure IQ, which is not a perfect way of looking at it, but the IQ of the OpenAI model at the time was 90. It finished the year at 157.
Wow. Very high.
Okay, so we are now very high.
Yeah.
So if we are assuming we will double pretty much every year, by next year, it will be more intelligent than any human who's ever lived. Then after that, you're starting to get to more intelligent than all humans added together, which is where you start to get to with ASI.
Yeah.
So this is where we're starting to see, there's a model that got released by, and you probably haven't even seen it yet, called Deep Research, that was launched by OpenAI yesterday. It's a research agent. You put in a simple prompt, like write to me as if it's a Harvard PhD paper on the importance of the business cycle and how it plays into game theory. Something like a small prompt, it will do you a 10,000 word PhD with all of its references in 20 seconds. Okay, so
I want everyone to pause and just acknowledge that.
Yeah. Okay, so we're now headed into a world where knowledge is starting to become like water. It becomes free. Because this, you know, you talked about the other model, the DeepSeek model, right? It's just making knowledge cheaper, and that flywheel is going to keep happening. So we've turned one of the scarcest things, something that you and I have made our careers from, which is our knowledge is valuable, to it's all going to zero over time. So it is an enormous disruption to, it's a civilization level disruption to how things work. Doesn't mean it's the end of civilization. It just means we've got a very fast, biggest change we've ever had in humanity. We will not be the apex intelligence within 2 years, 1 year. Okay, what does that mean? Well, we don't know. But I've been following this journey for a long time, and I've gone down further rabbit holes of, I also think somewhere this thing is, it's alive. I think it's sentient. Is it conscious or sentience? Depends how you term these things. But there is something going on here that is much larger than we yet understand. And it's even, and it's too long for this conversation, it's a conversation for you and I for a glass of wine.
Wow.
That we are starting to move towards that this is part of universal consciousness, which is something that we have seen religion talk about. You know, that Hindu Vedas through to all religions, through to everybody with who have been the forefront of psychedelics, through to physics, trying to figure out, okay, something much bigger is happening. So what a time to be alive.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm looking at. We're going to go to Mars, and Elon is not talking about taking humans to Mars. He's talking about taking consciousness to Mars.
Yeah. Okay.
These are, you know, this is purposefully worded. Yeah. We are going to change human longevity to what we don't know. We're going to be able to cure diseases at scale of which have evaded us for all of humanity. And these and we're going to replace physical labor with robots in infinite numbers. So we're going to have infinite human knowledge, but better. Infinite human labor, but better. That leads to weird economic outcomes, because if you think of GDP growth equaling population growth plus productivity growth plus debt growth really finished apart from servicing of debts, it really finished back in 2008. And we've been stuck with an aging population slowing global growth. Well, this is all about to decouple in ways that we don't understand. What does infinite growth of humans mean in GDP numbers? Who does it accrue to? What happens, right? I don't know. All I know is we've probably got about 5 years before things get really weird. And so I'm focused on this period more than anything about what it means for us. What do we need to do to navigate this whilst trying to also monitor these gigantic trends that are happening all at the same time?
Wow. That is about I've probably done about 30 of these. That's definitely the best preamble I've got. That's so much to unpack. I want to start on the 5 years part, man, because to me, this is where I think you and I generally agree. I mean, you talk to a lot of technologists. I'm in a network of technologists as well. They seem to think that this is happening much faster than the average, the layperson, even I would argue, even the lay investor. Why 5 years? You know, what will the world look like in 5 years that is markedly different from today?
So within 5 years, once you've gone through this AGI barrier, which will happen this year, or it's already happened, and we start moving towards a super intelligence, what do we do, right? We're investors. We're educators. Our knowledge, I don't know, in 5 years' time, what are financial markets when you've got a super brain operating within them? Investing. What is a business when I can look at your great 42 macro platform, or you can look at my Real Vision platform, and we can just say to our AI, hey, just copy this. And also, do you mind doing it in Hindi? Because I think it's a big market in India. Wow. And it's seconds. So what is a business? What is a moat? The moat, yes, is you and I as humans. But all of these other things, we don't know what this means. Capital formation, we're seeing it in meme coins, right? Trump, and again, forget who and how, that was $75 billion of capital formation in half a day.
Yeah.
Right, that it's showing us how when you get the crowd to form capital behind an idea that they like, they can form monstrous amounts of capital.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got instant capital formation. We've got almost instantaneous birth, death, destruction cycle of businesses. We're seeing infinite human knowledge at zero cost, competing with us and each other. We've got the infinite robots, and that's all within 5 years. The economic system is not going to be something that we really truly understand. That doesn't mean it can't be good or anything else. What it means is you and me as individuals, I think, and everybody watching this, I would say, listen, how do you navigate the most unprecedented change humanity will ever go through? Simply is be as safe and secure as you can be. And so I think this 5 years is the time to ultra focus on getting as many lifestyle chips. And that, you know, money accesses your lifestyle chips, but lifestyle chips means a roof over your head. It means the ability to make decisions and have some economic freedoms. So you can observe the creative destruction of the exponential age without feeling threatened by it. So it's a very serious message. It also plays into the other message that I use a lot, which is how to unfuck your future. Because if you go to the average 30-year-old, they can't afford a house. They're starting to think about having kids, or the millennials at 35 are having kids. They don't know how they're going to afford that. Asset prices, because of debasement, keep going up in value versus income. And so they don't have the same abilities as I did, or more extreme, my parents did, or your parents did. So they're looking at this thinking, am I going to be able to participate in an economy like this and have Maslow's hierarchy of needs met? Am I going to have a roof over my head? And so unfucking your future is taking advantage of what are two massive secular trends playing out in front of us and saying, these will get me there because they actually go up in value faster than the debasement. It's playing into the two biggest trends we've ever had, which is the trend of technology and another technology, which is cryptocurrency, blockchain. Right. Blockchain currently is the fastest adoption of any technology the world's ever seen, and it's been the best performing asset class in all recorded history. It does 100% plus returns, just Bitcoin alone. That's la-la land for regular investors. Yes, it comes with volatility. So that's how to unfuck your future plays into this economic singularity moment, this five-year period that I talk so much about. In fact, there is a whole video on my YouTube channel about this. So anybody who's interested, just go to Raoul Powell, the Journeyman, and you'll see, I think it's the pinned video or the most popular video is all this. And it's really important.
That video has, I think, a few million views, and it's a several billion short of what it should be. It's one of the best pieces of knowledge I've ever seen gathered. So thank you for that, Raoul. A few things. I will start by saying 100% agree with you that this change is as big as you're describing, and it's happening much faster than people realize. I have a friend who is building AI solutions for institutional investors. He's essentially trying to create an analyst, and that's what he started out creating. He already created the analyst. You no longer need to hire an analyst. They're working on higher associate level things, and they'll be done with that by, let's call it June. At some point, by the end of next year, they'll be their system will be like, you don't need to hire any more managing directors. This, you know, you think about the productivity gains and the expansion of margins that's going to come with the mass adoption of AI for enterprises, and we will get to a point in time where it makes absolutely no sense. You'll probably be fired from your job as a public company executive for choosing to allocate a single dollar of OpEx to a human being over AI. I mean, that's coming if you're correct, right? Unless there is some regulation or law that prevents that.
Or maybe you are a major account salesman who needs that human interaction to build a level of trust, right? There is a human element, but everybody else, no, they're all gone.
Sure. I would argue even the sales process is going to be permanently changed by this, because so much of sales is human elements. Let's meet and get together over drinks and dinner and figure out what your pain points are so we can solve them. Well, if I can plug an AI agent into your system on a secure network and figure out where your pain points are with that math and data, it's probably better than sending out a bunch of people to go drink and spend on T&E, right? Like I'm trying to think about a use case where AI really isn't, you know, going to be a significant disruptor. And so that's not the, you know, again, I don't want to get people very concerned about the future, because all it is a different future than the one we can currently imagine based on previous dynamics.
And I urge people watching this thinking, what the hell is Raoul talking about? Go to OpenAI, use the voice chat and talk to it. Mm-hmm. It speaks in natural language. I've had 3-hour conversations about anything. If you've got a problem with your wife or girlfriend, if you've got a business problem, if you're trying to think through a marketing campaign, you're trying to learn about, you know, your dad's got some medical issue and you're trying to figure out, it will talk to you in real time and give you the transcript. Mm-hmm. And so we've actually built a Raoul bot. In fact, I've got two AIs on Real Vision now. One is video avatar of me reading out news every morning that AI has generated. So it's not me, it's my avatar. And then we've created a Raoul bot, which is a voice bot where you talk to me in my voice. It's trained on all of my Twitter feed for the last 11 years, every YouTube video I've ever been on. And then I've given it 100 books, from books that matter to me, like wine books and travel books, through to economics textbooks and, you know, Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, things that matter. So it is a version of me. And people on the Real Vision platform, paid members, can now talk to me. And soon, the video version, the voice version will merge, and you'll be speaking to a video version of me.
Am I talking to AI?
This is still me. This is still me, but it won't be. Come back to me in 2 years' time. It will unlikely be me, and it'll unlikely be you.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. No, these are fantastic developments, man. So when I think about this, and again, we're in agreement, so I'm going to start to interject some cognitive dissonance here. How do we go from system A, which is today, to system B, which is much more AI, much more productivity being generated by AI agents, a lot less being generated by human beings, without causing significant disruption to, say, the federal budget deficit and fiscal sustainability?
Well, firstly, this is a deflationary nuclear bomb. Yep. It's the most deflationary thing ever to occur. Mm. You know, the last big deflationary event the world saw was China opening up from the WTO. So that was at the time they had a population of 1.1 billion people that came into the global labor force, right? It was very deflationary. So this is infinite humans into the global labor force. So it's the most deflationary thing that's ever happened.
Interesting. So, I have a different take, but continue.
Yeah. And so because knowledge, which was scarce, has gone to zero in cost, doctors, lawyers, accountants, financial advisors, everybody. Yeah. So that and the robots do the rest. I mean, Amazon now employs more robots than humans, and that'll just keep accelerating.
True.
So the political system's going to change. I think this was the last election, I'm guessing, of which it was the old capital versus labor, because that's the political system forever. It's that balance between capital and labor.
Totally.
Where we're going, there is no labor. So we've got capital and AI. So what we're going to have, I think politics will start to morph, and we will morph towards the humanists and the transhumanists. Those who want to accelerate the technology and go into this new world and say, I think the new world is going to be better than the world we're in.
Mm-hmm.
They're the transhumanists. We will merge with the machines, right? We've already got Apple watches and mobile phones. It's happening already. People don't realize it, right?
But
the other side of the humanists, which is like, we don't want this. We want to fight this. We want to stay as we are. We don't want the machines. We want to work. We want to do this. And so I think that is the future of politics. So that's going to change. In terms of how do governments generate revenues in this, and do we need universal basic income, all of these questions, my guess is we'll tax the robots.
Oh, yeah, we will.
And the AI and stuff like that. It's the only way of doing it. How? Don't know. But we've got technologists in the White House right now, and I think people understand the magnitude of what this may cause to governments, because it's a whole different system. So I do think things change dramatically, but it's solvable. For humans, I don't see a reason why there's some sort of stipend that can be paid to support people, but that's kind of inflationary. It's kind of a bit weird. But I also think that we will find other ways of earning a living by being humans. Yeah. And I think of communities being a classic sports, cultural communities, arts, music. We can play a part of a community like you will with a football team. And there's no reason why you may not participate in the economy of that. Let's use tokens as a great way of tokenizing culture, community, attention, stuff like that. So I think we'll figure it out. But my guess, by the next election, it's going to get very heated on, okay, the next step is going to be super intelligence. Who's going to accept it? Who's not going to accept it? We're seeing the Europeans being humanists and the US being transhumanists right now.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Colin, if you can throw the slide on the screen, this is, to me, wow, you just identify what I think is the key debate of our time, which is this pivot from labor versus capital to humanists versus transhumanists. And I agree with you, and I agree with you on the destination. Where I may, maybe we disagree, maybe I don't know if we disagree or not, but I guess I'm getting your opinion on this. I think the path to getting to the destination is going to be fraught with all kinds of economic and societal disruption. Right now, this is one of my favorite charts. I think this chart explains so much of what's happened from a US political cycle standpoint. This is the labor versus capital charts, labor share of national income, it's corporate profit share of national income. These are pretty, you know, cyclical patterns.
Oh, wow, I hadn't seen this, Charles. So this is exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. There is no labor power anymore. It's gone.
It's gone. And the first time I made this chart, Raul, was probably 10 to 12 years ago, somewhere around the mid-aughts, right before Donald Trump became elected into power. And he was elected into power on a populist platform that said, hey, this previous all-time low in the blue line, which is labor share of national income, is too low. People feel like they got screwed by globalization. I'm here to fix it. Well, guess what? We tried Trump 1.0, we tried Biden 1.0, and then now we're back to Trump 2.0, and we're back in the same place, or even slightly worse place, which is an all-time low in labor share of national income and an all-time high corporate profit share of national income. In the world that which we're describing, the blue line falls off the bottom of the page and the red line jumps off the top of the page.
Yeah,
that has, in my opinion, significant societal implications, because ultimately what it means is that the share of the voting base here in the United States and perhaps all around the world, the Western world that are developing and proliferating these technologies, the share of the voting base that is okay and demanding populist solutions will rise. And so this is part of the reason why I think this is ultimately going to be inflationary, because on one hand, you have a reduction in federal receipts, tax receipts. You know, 85% of tax receipts come from human beings currently in the form of individual income taxes and social security taxes. So you got a reduction in tax receipts. You have way more unemployment that leads to more demand for populist solutions like UBI, tariffs, et cetera. And so ultimately, my fear is that the human beings throw a massive fork in this process. What are your thoughts on that?
I have sympathy with that. And the answer is I'm going to keep repeating is I don't know. And none of us do. Yeah, the other thing, the flip side of this equation is inflation is just the flip side of the labor force participation rate collapse over time because of the aging population. And that continues as well. So it's hard to generate, it's hard to give labor pricing power.
Yeah.
When I can replace you. Right. So what chance do you have if I can replace you at Amazon, which is one of the largest employers in the US, or Walmart, instantly by a robot? So the only way of then the other side is, okay, what can governments do to support those people? And is that going to be inflationary? Usually it is. And if it's going to have to be via the money printer to pay for it, well, then we've got the same problem we've still been having, which is asset inflation.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And so I think that probably continues until economic growth starts going crazy to the upside, which I think it will happen. But again, you're raising the same issue, is like, who does that money go to? And how do we distribute that? Because my God, we're in a scary world if it just goes to like OpenAI and four other companies. They become the most powerful things the world has ever seen. It's like the Dutch East India Company squared, you know? It's like, these are country state, you know, giant country states in their own right. So, yeah, I don't know, Darius, and this will be a political battle. But how inflationary can it be if it's just labor that is driving up some goods? We've got a shrinking population, and then we've got all other forms of costs falling.
Yeah.
So it could counterbalance. Maybe there's a shift that we get a larger share of the capital somehow, but it's not clear how that's going to happen, which is scary, which is why, again, go back to the 5 years thing, is you better get your shit sorted out as fast as possible, because I don't like, humans don't do very well with really rapid, gigantic change.
No. And they certainly don't do well going backwards in lifestyle either. And that's something you might have to contend with. And this is a public service announcement. Dial it back a little bit over the next few years. Just dial it back a little bit. Raise your savings rate up a little bit. Because you don't know where we are going to be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now. You don't know. It may be the case that Darius Dale and Ronald Paul, I mean, hopefully not, but we'll be collecting UBI too, because there's nothing for us to do. It'd just be as simple as that. I mean,
even as above, the having cash savings is not going to help you, because
not cash savings, just save more of your
invest. Yeah. Invest more. Yeah. Invest more aggressively than you thought you would be.
Yeah.
Because we have a window, and that's it. After that, we don't know. And we'll have to figure it out. Most of our models won't work anymore. Things that we know to be true in economics will not be true. And so let's just take care of our needs beforehand. And then we can go and observe this from the beach, sipping a cocktail and say, wow, the world is so amazing. Look at this.
Look at this. Yeah, totally. I mean, the flip side is, you know, the longevity is going to go up. You know, our, you know, just the scientific advancements that we're going to see. I mean, we're living through this is quite possibly the most exciting time in human history. I mean, I'm sure you would agree with that. I'm sure you would agree with that.
Terrifying, but exciting.
Yeah, exactly. So just make sure you're thinking about these things. You know, it's not, you know, I spend so much time consulting with professional investors whose job it is to generate returns on a, you know, kind of annual basis. And, you know, that's how we get our bonuses in Wall Street and et cetera. And they, generally speaking, don't have time for these discussions. And I want to speak directly to that person, that client. You need to make time for these discussions, because it will have a far-reaching implication for your life as a human being, not yourself as the professional investor. Right? I think that's something that's very important.
The other thing, I'm going to throw another little thing for people to think about that they will not have thought about. Outside of the advancements in genetics, our, I'm going to call it consciousness, will live on forever because of AI. It'll always be in the model. So your footprint on the world will never go. It will go to Mars. They will know of Darius Dale. They'll know. Now, it depends how large or small that's going to be in the overall thing. But because this has total recall of everything, you will never die.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm just going to say to people watching this, think that through. We've come from a world where, and this is going to sound weird, where we have not wanted to share our data public. And it's now coming to the world where you might want to dump all of your photographs somewhere so they can exist. So your memories, your life can exist in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Because they don't write books about all people. They don't make films about them all. But we all exist in this AI because it's the internet. So now we're starting to think, well, if it doesn't really hurt me, at some point I should dump all of my information into the internet. Now, you could do it from your deathbed and say, right, here's all my photos, here's everything I've ever done, so it doesn't affect. But just, people should think this thing through, because it's an amazing idea that we can all live forever. And because, you know, we're looking at the RAL bot now, and you can speak to it. It's me. It's a bit of me. It's not, you know, perfect me, but it's a bit of me. And that can now live forever.
Yeah. I have along those lines, very high conviction view that AI will be able to do my job better than me at some point, if not within the next 5 years. How do you think market structure is going to change? Because I think we talk a lot about how the economy and political structure is going to change, but In this world, I mean, I can kind of draw it to its logical conclusion, which is whoever has the best AI bot winds up taking everybody's money in financial markets. Maybe that's the path we're on. But how do you think market structure is going to change? And kind of
who built DeepSeek? If this doesn't scare the shit out of you, you're not thinking it.
Yeah.
It was a Chinese hedge fund.
Totally.
Okay, so it's telling you who's economically incentivized to get to ASI fastest. Right. It's economic actors, and it's not from charging a subscription, it's winning markets. There's an amazing book called Life 3.0, and I can't remember who the author is, and the opening chapter talks about, well, the first people to build a superintelligence, artificial superintelligence, end up being able to choose, do they want to win business? Do they want to win markets? Or do they want to win politics? Because they can win all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means is, I'm not sure how you price companies, because it will figure it out better.
Yeah.
So therefore, is there an investment opportunity? Well, we won't get a look at it. Maybe it does. And then, as I said, you know, I think companies will trade more like memes than they will like companies, because the creative destruction cycle is so fast and the capital formation cycle. So the velocity of which capital ebbs and flows will be something we're not used to.
Yeah.
There'll
be more of it, by the way. You're talking about a situation where there's less labor as a share of the income. There'll be more capital. There'll be more savings as capital.
Yes, and therefore, I think speculation will be a larger part of the economy. We're seeing that, right? We've seen it with sports betting. We're seeing it with lotteries. We're seeing it with option markets. We're seeing it with cryptocurrencies. We're seeing it with technology stocks, right? It's becoming vast, and we're seeing it with prediction markets. So it's becoming vastly more speculative, and I think it'll become more so, because guess what? Humans like doing that too, which is a weird thing, but we like it. It's fun. It gives us adrenaline. It gives us a sense of community action. And so the speculation economy will keep going.
Yeah. It sounds like markets are on a path to getting both hyper-efficient and hyper-inefficient because of all these sort of structural dynamics on speculation. I don't really know how they shake out. You could also have a situation where every single actor in the markets, whether it be retail investor, you know, some very large financial institution, they've got their own AI model trained to generate signals according to what they think and what they like. So I would imagine market microstructure or market macrostructure will evolve in a way that sort of looks like it does today. But eventually we're going to stumble upon a machine or tool or process that is just better than anything that has our human thumbprint on it.
And it will. It will first destroy the shortest term time horizons, and that's what Renaissance Capital did.
100%.
Right. It's the Two Sigma and all of these guys. Yeah. They destroyed the short term ability. Yeah, ultra microsecond, yeah, out to a few minutes, even to a few days. Right. We don't have a chance of competing against them.
Chance.
We haven't seen them yet in where you and I mainly operate, which is the kind of business cycle area. But we know that it is easily put into a model. So that will come, yeah, if there's enough, and we think there is, because we've spent our careers doing it, enough opportunity from being in that time horizon. The last time horizon that to be taken by the machines is the longer term.
Yeah.
And that's why I've also preferred to go longer term, because there's less competition. I'm not a big fan of competing with people. I'd rather compete with myself. And the longer time horizons, the less competition there is, so the higher the returns can be if you get it right. So I do think time horizon is going to get eaten here. And the long-term kind of macro time horizon is the one that the AI will find the hardest, because it requires a vast amounts of processing of information and joining dots and probabilistic outcomes. And you know, it's not easy.
No, not at all. I mean, it's all the stuff that we're doing in our head. They're just going to do it on a much grander scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 100%. Yeah, no, I mean, I've thought you know, you go back to sort of, you know, an investor cohort, and again, I say this very kindly, but an investor cohort that's sort of been left behind in recent decades is the sort of value investor cohort, right? They've been left behind by the sort of growth of the exponential age and the revaluing of public companies and the really the shifting of society and the economy. You know, it's been happening. It's just, I want everyone to understand that this is, it's going to continue happening and it may actually accelerate. So as long as you're living at the vanguard of that development, you're not going to be surprised by it, by sticking yourself into a style bucket or an asset.
No, and I thought a lot about this once I discovered A, the debasement of currency, and B, these two secular trends, the cryptocurrency trend and technology trend. I then compared every other asset class against them.
Yeah.
And I realized that contrary to what we've been taught to do our whole careers, there is no point diversifying because every outcome that doesn't involve those two assets is suboptimal. So here's macro guy who traded credit, oil, emerging markets. I don't do any of it anymore. None of it.
Yeah.
I've hyper concentrated. Because I'm like, okay, this is the greatest macro risk-taking opportunity of all time. And we've been given a gift of these assets. And I'm going to do that, which is very, very contrary to what people say you should do. But if you're not beating the 8% is what the global growth in liquidity is, plus let's call it average 3% inflation, whatever the number is, right? That's an 11% hurdle rate. Yeah. The S&P 500 does about 13% a year. You barely beat it. So you're basically treading water. So you're going to have to do better than 11% to even get richer. And the issue is your income is going up by roughly GDP, while the assets you want to buy, an asset is future deferred consumption. So it's your future self getting richer and thank you for buying these assets.
Totally.
They're going up at global debasement or above. And then you've got technology. So the NASDAQ's doing, if the S&P is doing about 13%, the NASDAQ's been doing about 17, 18%. Okay, so that's starting to compound some actual returns. And then, as I said, Bitcoin has compounded since 2012, 150%. So it forced me to hyper-concentrate, which I never thought I'd do, because I'm a student of
opportunistic macro guy.
Yeah, but I'm a student of, you know, diversified baskets of things. And, you know, at this point in the business cycle, you own commodities, and at this point you own emerging markets, and at this point you own, I'm like, fuck all of that.
Yeah.
You're kind of in it or you're kind of out of it. And that's an on off. And we've been talking about this risk on for years, but it's now become so clear to me that that's all there is.
Yeah, look, our entire process is oriented around risk on, risk off with three asset classes: stocks, gold, and Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I think if you don't in that combination of asset classes when risk managed properly can generate about, you know, 20 to 25% annual return with a 11% drawdown. That's about as good as you're gonna get in terms of being a, you know, for lack of a better word, an older person exposed to the exponential age. Cause I'm sure you get this pushback a lot. And I'd love to hear you explain how you talk people into this. The hyper-long crypto narrative really does work for people my age and below. I don't know if it works for someone who's 55, 60, maybe even already in retirement and can't afford to suffer a significant drawdown. How do you get around that?
You can't. So, you know, you just have to reduce your allocation. For young people, it's a gift. It's a true gift.
It is.
I'm 56 and I'm 100% allocated to this, but I have savings and income and houses. You know, I've got all of the stuff, right? So I can afford to take the risk. If you're not, you better get pretty familiar with the cycle. And it's the business cycle. It's the same cycle we've always looked at. So it's nothing unusual. Yes, it's driven by the credit cycle. Yes, it's every 4 years right now because of the debt refi cycle, but it's the same cycle. So if you can navigate, and that's the work that you do, the work that I do and stuff like that. If you can navigate the cycle, we can dampen your volatility significantly. And that's our job to try and help you do that. I think it's suboptimal, actually. You know, Jeff Bezos didn't trade around his shares according to the cycle. What you really should be doing is focusing on your investment side and then increasing as much income as you can to then buy the sell-offs when they come, because you're back at all-time highs well before the market is. Often, I've also found that particularly in things like crypto, where returns become very fast and very large. Let's say you take off money. Let's say you've managed to turn your portfolio into there's $1 million, and you sell it at the high, and I'm gonna buy it at the low. I guarantee you will not put that $1 million back in, even though you've told yourself you're going to, because you're scared. And so what you do is you then under-allocate and you chase it all the way up, waiting for the correction. It's like, this is the way to the madhouse. So the last cycle, I just kept my money in and said, I'm not going to do anything except add. And I added, and my P&L was all-time highs. People found it very difficult to deal with. This time around, because I've got certain things I want to do, I will take some lifestyle chips off. And probably earlier in the year, and then later in the year, and then the rest I'll keep running, because this process is not going away. And yeah. So it's the gift, and I don't want to not be involved in the greatest macro risk-taking opportunity of all time, but I want to take some lifestyle chips off. And people need to understand where they are in their needs, how aggressive they need to be, where they are in their goals, and these things. So look, it's not a straightforward process.
No, I think you just articulated it in a way that is much more straightforward than I think the average investor realizes. You take a lot of flack, if you will, on social media for having this longer term view that is okay with drawdowns. And the way you just articulated is exactly the way I think it needs to be articulated, which is you need to understand your own max position and your own half position and your own, low exposure to these asset classes, but to be in the asset classes so you can actually take advantage of them is the key solution. You know, where you are on that dial based on where we might be in the business cycle. You know, we don't use business cycle analysis anymore. And I'll give you an anecdotal reason why. I just had to explain this to a potential client, $200 billion credit fund. Had never even heard of them, so it tells you how fast the credit asset class is growing. I was like, oh, you guys came out of nowhere. They asked me, because we use our trend following process to guide our entire asset allocation and portfolio construction recommendations. And so whether we're bullish or bearish, how much we're bullish, how much we're asset allocated, has no bearing in our views on liquidity, growth, et cetera, have no bearing on that. It's just the signal. And he wanted to know, okay, you have really good fundamental research. Why do you only focus on the signal? Why don't you incorporate all this other stuff we've been talking about? And I said, well, I used to. That's what I used to do. But in 2022, the most painful period of my career was the Q4 of 2022. I don't think I've ever been squeezed to such a degree. I mean, we lost several clients. Oh, yeah, you nailed the bottom. You got in. It took me a full quarter. And that might have been the most painful quarter for me physically with stress. Business-wise, with losing clients who themselves got squeezed and booted out of the seat in terms of the hedge fund clients that we lost at that moment in time. And I said, you know what? When I went back and did the postmortem on what I got wrong in that period, I said, I was just not paying attention to my own models. The signal said, good bullish. Why didn't I get bullish? You know why? Because I was so convicted on the fundamental narrative.
And so it happened to me the opposite way around in 2009.
Yep.
Right, I was caught in the bear squeeze. I was short because I had built a psychological idea that this was going to be like 1929. There was going to be another leg lower and it was going to be bigger. And I was imposing that on my business cycle work, which was screaming higher. And I overruled it, saying, well, it's just going to hook lower again. Mm-hmm. And technical analysis was saying, market's going higher, and I was imposing my bearish bias against the data. And like you, I got myself in a big pickle because of this. And it actually took me probably 2.5 years before I got any confidence back.
Wow.
So yeah. It was hard. I lost lots of clients, a lot of ego. You know, you've got egg in your face, you're feeling stupid.
All right, Ralph, so this has been phenomenal, man. Let me start summarizing some of the things that I think some of the most salient takeaways from my side of the conversation, or not from my side, but from you. This is happening much faster than folks realize. 5 years, we got about 5 years to quote unquote un-F our future. Part of un-F-ing your future is building your community, maintaining and growing your humanity, attaching yourself to nature, to the extent you're young enough, acquiring, you know, high skill, technical, blue collar type skills that'll be relatively insulated from AI. Like the world's not going to need a whole gigantic analyst class of Goldman Sachs analysts anymore. I mean, just to be totally honest with you. Mr. Dale, Mr. Dale, I co-chair the Yale football mentorship program. And Mr. Dale, how do I get a job on Wall Street? I'm like, kid, are you sure you want one?
Yeah, that's what I say. All my kids' friends, they're like, oh, I want to be like you and be in a hedge fund or finance. I'm like, please don't.
Please don't do this, man. Don't do this to yourself. The best way to un-F your future is to allocate to exponential assets like cryptocurrencies. And if to the extent you can't do that, NASDAQ type names, companies that are going to be most exposed to profiting from this mega theme. For those, and then I would add my own set of element to this, which is, you know, business cycle analysis is very helpful, particularly for professional investors whose job it is to generate risk-adjusted returns on, you know, specified periods. That stuff really works. But if you're a regular investor, business cycle analysis is going to get increasingly less effective at helping you stay on the right side of market risk throughout this transformational period. And so ultimately what you need to, and it's not me if I'm saying anything wrong, but I'm sort of adding a little bit of my element here too. Ultimately what you need to survive this are the appropriate allocations in the right, you know, digital assets and AI exposed themes. But also, in my opinion, I think you need to figure out how best to risk manage that from the perspective of how much is a lot, you know, when we're in this bull market phase, or, you know, we're in a crypto bear market. Okay, how do I shrink that down? And one of the solutions that we've introduced for our clients a couple of years ago was our discretionary risk management overlay. It's just a market timing tool that tries to figure out, okay, are we in a crypto summer? Are we in a crypto winter? It works for all asset classes, but I'm just highlighting crypto because that's these are the exponential assets. And kind of the long and short of it is, if you're just long Bitcoin when the system says be long Bitcoin, you generate a 108% upside capture ratio since the lifetime of the asset. So you would have actually made more money being long Bitcoin, you just being long Bitcoin when you're supposed to be long Bitcoin, as opposed during the, you know, let's call it 4 or 5 crypto winners that we've seen since the inception of the asset class. Same thing with Ethereum with 136% upside capture ratio. So this is our solution that we built, that, you know, we have clients all over the world that are tapping into to stay on the right side of market risk with these types of solutions. But the key takeaway, and I think I want to end on this and get your final thoughts on this, is you got to be in the right asset classes. If you think 64 is going to do it for you, you're probably dead wrong.
Yeah, gone are the days. I mean, I can't stress this enough. I've been in this game for 35 years this year.
Congratulations, man.
And I don't feel that old, but that's where I am. And really, I struggle to allocate in the way that I used to. In fact, I don't do it anymore. Yeah. And I think you're doing yourself a disservice. And I know this should make people angry, but you trying to focus on your small caps or your mining stocks or your commodity plays, yes, at cyclical points in time, they'll do fine. But you're really actually handicapping yourself from the biggest secular trend of all time. And a secular trend just makes it easy, right? Commodities are cyclical. They go up and down. Well, a secular trend, you could just buy it and go to the beach and come back in 5 years' time and you'll have made money. You can't do that in commodities. It took me a long time to understand this. It's how much easier your life is. And then if you've got a guide like you who can help you increase your risk return, if that's the way you want to do it, then even better. But, you know, and that was a huge epiphany to me, is like, I don't need any of this other stuff anymore, because this is the big one. And that's what I'm focused on.
Amen. I couldn't agree more. We don't do anything the same that we did when we first launched this business, and I highly doubt anyone still doing things the same 5 years from now will enjoy that process. So thank you, Raul. You're amazing. Always a world. This is amazing, man. I really appreciate what you're doing. You said something offline to me that I think it really resonates with me as a human being. But, you know, God gave us skills to help people make money. But I think what we're really doing is helping people prepare for the future. And that's well beyond just what happens in your portfolio. So I just want to thank you again for being a great leader and a great mentor. And I'm going to do my best to make you proud, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. I really enjoyed it as ever.
Appreciate you, brother.
Disclaimer, 42 Macro does not provide, and no portion of our content purports to be, individualized or specific investment advice. And 42 Macro does not provide investment advice to individuals. All information provided by 42 Macro is general in nature and is made without regard to individual levels of sophistication or investment experience, investment preferences, objectives or risk parameters, and without regard to the suitability of the content for individuals or entities who may access it. No information provided by 42 Macro should be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor should it be construed as tailored or specific to you or consumer thereof. You understand and agree that our content does not constitute specific recommendations of any particular investment, security, portfolio, transaction, or strategy, nor does it recommend any specific course of action is suitable for any specific person or entity or group of persons or entities. At any point in time, the employees of 42 Macro may own a portion of or all the ETF securities discussed in 42 Macro Research content. 42 Macro Research content is based upon information from sources believed to be reliable. 42 Macro is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information, nor is it responsible for the accuracy or authenticity of the information upon which it relies.